Welcome everyone to the Apocalypse Podcast. I am Steve. He is
Dr. Van Beek.
Dr. Van Beek. That's a very official term title.
I went with doctor because of what we're covering tonight. I thought I should say that, you know, I have a doctorate.
Yes. Yeah.
It's, by the way, it's only a DTH. It's not an actual PhD. Though I had it evaluated by the group and they said it's the equivalent to a PhD in Canada.
Well, that's okay. You wrote a quality thesis. It was approved and you defended and all that good stuff. No, that's a doctor.
And it was actually read by a world-class scholar who thought it was good.
Yeah. So take that, everyone.
Yeah. That was James Vanderkam read it because I had sent it to him and he said, actually, my plane was delayed and I had absolutely nothing to do in that airport. So I read your thesis. It was quite good.
Yeah. Thanks, James. That's not
the best I can hope for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vanderkam is a world-class Enoch scholar.
Yeah. Yeah. And much nicer than his brother, Wally. Wally Vanderkam.
Wally is...
We've never liked him, Wally, at all.
No. Yeah. So, Steve.
Yes, sir.
As we discuss this, we are now on the seven seals. And it's... Can I give a little bit in the beginning?
I would insist that you would.
Oh, okay. So, when you're doing the seven seals... you're going to do seven seals. There's an interlude, seven trumpets, an interlude, seven bowls, and then seven thunders, and you're at the end of time. Right. So some people see the seven seals, the seven thunders, and the seven seven vials or seven bowls.
Sorry, folks. I'm actually making seal-like motions every time he says seal. Sorry, yeah, it's my bad. My bad. Forget it. I'm sorry.
I needed 500 Christmas seals. Remember that commercial with all the seals? it's not what we wanted.
Sorry.
But anyway, so some people look at these as subsequent events. Hmm. That there are the seven seals, the interlude. Then you have the seven trumpets, which are an intensification.
Yeah.
In the next set of events.
Yeah.
And then you have the interlude and then you have the seven bowls, which is more intense again than the seven trumpets. And then it takes you to the end of time. So that way of looking at this, it's very common, is to look at this as linear, as a linear event.
Right.
Not concurrent. A series of linear events.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leading you to the end of time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you.
But not all scholars will see it this way. Some scholars will see this, in a circular pattern, or probably easier to grasp that these are parallel.
Mm.
Because some, and this is how I go with it, you know, is that the seventh seal is, which is actually just silence in heaven. You never actually get the seventh of any of these. So the seventh seal is silence in heaven. And they say that's a pause to prepare you for the seven trumpets. But I say the seventh seal actually can take you to the end of time. The seventh trumpet takes you to the end of time. And it really does seem that way. And then the seventh bowl takes you to the end of time. So all three of these are just different views of similar events.
Okay. Okay. That makes total sense.
So that's the two ways to look at it. And we're just going to, we'll go through them naturally from chapter to chapter. But if you keep that in the back of your head. So if you're a dispensationalist, if you believe that all of these events are very literal and they happen in a 7-year period, you're looking at this in a linear fashion. If you're a preterist or a idealist, so preterists see it in the first century, idealists see it as a spiritual application or a symbolic application, they will see it more as parallel events.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So now we're into the seven seals.
Do you want me to read them a seal at a time? Sorry, I'm not trying to be goofy. But I can't help it.
You can read the first four actually kind of go together.
Okay. And now I watched. Sorry. Chapter 6, verse 1. Here we go. Now I watched when the Lamb opened one of the seven seals. And I heard one of the four living creatures say with a voice like thunder, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a white horse. And its rider had a bow and a crown that was given to him. And when he came out conquering, And he came out conquering and to conquer. And when he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth so that people should slay one another. And he was given a great sword.
And the third seal?
Oh, you want me to keep that? Sorry, my bad. When he opened the third seal, I heard its living creature say, come. And I looked, and behold, a black horse, and its rider had a pair of scales in its hand. And I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, 3 quarts of barley for a denarius. Do not harm the oil and wine.
And this, and then the fourth
seal. You want me to keep going? Okay.
Yeah. Just to the fourth seal, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Sorry. I thought you meant verse 4. That's why I stopped there. And when he went to the, when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, which is interesting that it just happened to be four living creatures now.
Yes, that's actually a good point.
Oh, come. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and its rider was named Death, and Hades followed him. And they were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and with famine and with pestilence and by wild beasts of the earth.
So, Steve, the first four seals then are, of course, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Hmm. And people have written on the four horsemen. I think Billy Graham did a book called The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And we remember we had a friend whose wife was going to talk. She talked about care for horses. And yes. We thought we could mix our fields of study into caring for the four horses of the apocalypse. that was Dave Squire's wife.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
But the first one, so the living creatures from chapter 4 and again from chapter 5 are the ones that are pointing out these four horsemen. So the first one is a white horse. Now, some people think that the white horse is Jesus Christ.
Okay. Right?
But you do have Jesus later on. I think he's riding a white horse again later on in the book of Revelation. But this white horse, we often say this is incipient war. This is the beginning of war. And he has a bow and he's riding out to conquer. And wouldn't you believe I forgot the name of the people? Isn't that the craziest thing? The Parthians. The Parthians, the Romans would talk about the Parthians who were unbelievable in their day, horsemen.
Okay.
And they would ride horses and they could ride past targets and they could turn on their horse and they, with their bows, they could hit these targets. And they would do raiding parties into Rome. And some people think that is the image that John was using.
Okay.
But the most important thing to think is that this is the beginning of warfare. Okay, is the white horse.
Hmm, hmm.
So then the second horse, the second living creature, he says, come. And he shows a bright red horse who takes peace from the earth. People slay one another with a great sword. And so that is that is open warfare. So you have incipient warfare.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're in the Second World War, you're in talks with Germany. They're doing some stuff in the background. But by the second horse, you've got wide open warfare.
Yeah.
People are dying. Blood is being shed.
Okay.
Okay. The third seal then, he says, come up here. And he's on a black horse, which you would have thought was death. But the black horse isn't death. The black horse is famine.
Mm.
He's got a pair of scales in his hand. And that's scales to weigh things. And he's weighing out wheat and barley. And then a voice says, a quart of wheat for a denarius and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, but do not harm the oil and the wine. And the whole idea is a denarius is a day's wage.
Okay.
And for a day's wage, you can get a quart of wheat or you can get 3 quarts of barley because barley is cheaper than wheat.
Okay.
Unless you turn it into beer. And then, you know, I don't know what happens then. But that's a barley sandwich, by the way. I don't know why I remember that stupid old commercial, have a barley sandwich.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the idea here is that after open warfare comes famine, and so people are starving. Do not hurt the oil and the wine. My teacher always suggested this. So Ed Neufeld was my teacher, and he suggested this meant that the wealthy weren't being touched by this.
Hmm.
This was affecting the poor, but not so much the wealthy at this point in time. And then the fourth seal is what happens is the end of the war, and your rider now is Death in Hades, and he is going to kill the rest that weren't killed by the open warfare and weren't killed by the beginnings of this famine. He's going to kill them by the famine and by the pestilence and the wild beasts. And And so some people think that this is actual future warfare that's going to happen.
Right.
And others will say, and quite rightly so, that this is actually an example of what happens whenever there is war. Mm-hmm. So whenever there is war, you have the beginning of war. You have the open, wide open bloodshed that happens. Somewhere through the war comes, you know, you run out of food.
Yeah.
And in John's day, they would actually, in those days, in that part of the world, people tended to fight in the, they would fight in the wintertime sometimes, or they'd fight in the summertime. But in the spring, they'd be planting their crops, and in the fall, they'd be harvesting their crops.
Right.
And they would fight in between, right? But one of the things you would do is you would burn a nation's crops. And so what happens at the end of it is starvation. And then, of course, with starvation, you can't afford to keep up the things that keep your water clean. You get pestilence, you get dead people, you get pestilence. Wild beasts come and you get killed. And if you look at the First and Second World War, this is exactly what happened during these times.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Like the dispensationalists must have a field day with this, right? Because it fits so nicely with world wars that we've seen in the last 100 years.
Yeah, it fits beautifully with wars that we've seen. But they would say, and this is the coming war. This is the war of the from the judgment of God now.
Yeah.
Rather than, but others would say, you know, this is every war. He's right. He's not pointing to a specific war. He's just pointing to war. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way that we work with the four horses of the apocalypse.
Okay.
And is it four horsemen of the apocalypse or four horses? Because it's actually four horses. Oh, no, it's the rider. It's the rider on the horse we're talking about, of course. It's the horsemen.
Yeah.
And so now we're on verse 9, Stevie.
All right.
Just go 9 to 11.
Sounds good. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the witness that they had borne. They cried out with a loud voice, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? When each were given a white robe and told to rest a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete, who were to be killed as they themselves had been.
This is kind of a crazy verse in many, many ways. And this fits in with our whole idea of the death motif in the book of Revelation. That he's talking to a church that's going to die.
Right.
And so when the fifth seal opens, you see the people that are under the altar of God that have been killed because they were Christians. They've been killed for their faith. And very much was just starting to happen in the book of Revelation. It happened in some of the places. It didn't happen all over Rome. Remember, Laodicea was fine. Mm-hmm. Smyrna was having trouble. And so Christians were now starting to be killed for their witness. And he says these people that are being killed for their witness are under God's altar, right? And they're crying out in a loud voice. And this is crazy, Steve. They cry out, O sovereign Lord, how long before you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?
Right.
So it's okay to cry out against those that are killing you, it seems.
Yes. Yeah, that seems an easy conclusion to draw.
Yeah. At least we're probably going to do that if it ever – and, you know, when we say if it ever comes to us, we always have to remember there are Christians around the world right now,
yes,
that are being killed for their faith.
Right, exactly. You know,
that are being put in prison, that are being starved, and that are being killed for their faith. So I'm just gonna shut, somebody's sending me stuff.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm so popular. Yeah.
I just thought my 3-minute egg timer was ready.
That's right. Oh, that's what I'll have for supper.
Oh, yeah.
So then they're given a white robe. But here's the crazy thing about this verse, Steve. Yep. They're given a white robe, stands for righteousness, all the way through this book. And they're told to wait a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and brothers should be complete, who were to be killed as they themselves were killed.
Yeah.
So you got these dead people under the altar that are crying out to God saying, oh God, how long before you avenge us? And we can even, like, you can't really say they were prophets and stuff, but you know, God's prophets were killed for him all the time. and his Christians are being killed for him here. And they're saying, when are you going to do it? And he says to them, a little bit longer, got a few more of you that have to die, and then I'll take care of this situation.
Yeah.
And this is not the thing that you want to hear.
No, right? They wanted a different message. Thank you very much.
we really do not want to hear that it's for us to die. But he's not writing this to us. He's writing to a church that's going through persecution.
Right.
And for churches today that are going through this persecution, they'd be able to relate to this, say, how can God have a plan that leads to our death? And God says, but I can have that plan. And we would say, because I have all eternity to be with you. And this is just a short, I hate this part because I really want to go home and make a lot of money and just live a really easy life.
Yeah.
And when I think of it, I really do live an easy life.
Yeah.
And this is not promising me that.
Yeah. 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 This is
not saying I'm God, I can do what I want.
Yeah.
And, yes. And can I have my best for you even in your death? And then the answer must be yes.
Yeah.
Because we can't say no, because that would block our whole faith. We have to say, yeah, God knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, in concert with what Paul was telling us and he's in his letters, what Jesus told us in the Gospels, it's the same narrative all the way through, right? You will die for your faith. Get over it.
If you live for me, you're going to die for me. But remember, the other piece of this book is, and he's going to say it in the very next verses, if you live for me, you're going to die. But if you don't live for me, you are going to wish you could be dead.
Yeah.
Because when you face me, that's going to be a rough moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for true Christians, nah, don't say that. That's not fair. For Christians in the book of Revelation, standing up for God is really what it's all about. Standing up for your faith. And later on, he's going to say, you know, you don't have to go against the Romans, but if you're a Christian, you will.
Yeah. Yep.
Verse number 12.
Okay, 12. When he opened the sixth seal, I looked and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth, and the moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth as the fig tree sheds its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. The sky vanished like a scroll that is being rolled up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. And then the kings of the earth, and the great ones, and the generals, and the rich and the powerful, and everyone, slave and free, hid themselves in caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who is seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who can stand?
Yeah. And now he's going to say in the sixth seal, so Revelation chapter 6, is very, very much like Mark 13 or Matthew 24 or Joel, the end of Joel, when everything's wrapped up and the sky turns dark. So that's kind of, he's going back to that same judgment imagery that's in all three of those passages. And he opens the sixth seal. So there's a great earthquake and the sun becomes black as sackcloth and the moon like blood. And I remember in my life a few times seeing kind of a blood red moon and thinking, mm-hmm. Hey, is this the end of it all? Mm-hmm. But that was probably just dust in the air. that causes that. But it's very much like that, right? And the stars fall from the sky to the earth, and the fig tree sheds its winter fruit, shaken by a gale. The stars falling to the earth could be meteorites mm-hmm. falling to the earth. Remember the same thing that destroyed the dinosaurs?
Right.
It could refer to the angels being thrown down.
Mm, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and we're not sure which. Here's the part we know, is that everybody on the earth at this point, kings, rich, generals, powerful, slave and free, are hiding themselves. And they're actually asking for the rocks of the mountains to fall on them. Because now they're facing God
yeah.
and Jesus. Remember, God and Jesus are equal in this passage again.
Right.
So he's doing the equality between the two. He says, from the throne, the face of him on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, the day of their wrath has come.
Yeah.
And so remember, the Christians, they've been killed. And they're under the altar saying, when are you going to avenge us? And God says, you know, there's more of you that have to die. And then all of the other people on the earth are just terrified now because they're in the presence of right. Of an angry. Remember, sinners in the hands of an angry God. That was a sermon by one of the Wesleys, right?
That's right.
I'm going to say
right.
John Wesley, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was the grumpier of the two. So, and then he says, who can stand? And then chapter 7 is going to tell us who can stand.
Yeah.
And that's it for chapter 6.
Thanks, Lair. Folks, as always, there's not much I can ever add to the wisdom that Lair has given us. That was just good stuff. And like he said, remember, 7 seals. But do we see the 7th seal? No, we don't see the 7th seal in this chapter yet, right? So, and I'm guessing we're not going to see it in chapter 7.
Good guess. Good
guess, eh?
Yeah. But giving it away, Steve. You're giving it away.
Oh, darn it. And next week on Batman.
Same bat time.
Yeah. But thanks so much for joining us. We'll look forward to next week. Remember, I think we got about maybe 1 or 2 weeks left, and then Larry and I are kind of on break for, you know, 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we'll get back at it. So, all right. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you in a week's time when we'll do chapter 7 and we'll find out the mystery of the 7th seal. Until next time, I'm Steve. He was Larry. This was the Apocalypse Podcast.